If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
Stuff.biz.
Hello. Welcome. I will be your host today because Sven has had an electrical fire at his home. I'm just kidding. No, it's not kidding. He's otherwise occupied, though. He does have some home maintenance issue he has to care for, but it is not as serious as actually having his entire house burned down from an electrical fire. It's definitely not that. That didn't happen. So here we are. I'm with Alex, and Borzoi is going to be sort of an ambient voice hovering in the background. We have the Moldbug icon to sort of represent him, so imagine that Moldbug is the one that's speaking his lines. But here we are. Here we are. So as we went to air, breaking news, Ron DeSantis is physically fighting high school psychology teachers? Is this what I'm hearing? That would be amazing.
He's Scientology. He's banning all the psychology shit. He's a Scientologist now. Isn't that their thing? Aren't they like hung up about like psychiatry and psychologists and how they're all evil or something?
Yeah, Scientologists. You know what it is. I will be honest with you. I think it's crypto anti-Semitism on the part of Scientology. I think Scientology is an
I mean, I don't blame the Scientologists. I agree with them.
Well, I saw Tom Cruise on Oprah Winfrey talking about this years ago, and every point he made, I agreed with.
Yeah,
really? It was like, all right, I mean,
don't like psychiatry? Okay.
But he was just like, he's like, yeah, this stuff isn't, and he wasn't like a crazy person either. He wasn't saying like nutty things. I mean, he does say nutty things sometimes, but he was saying like, yeah, there's no evidence behind this. They can't replicate any of this stuff. It's all, and I was like, that's actually all good points.
Funny that you mention Scientology, Alex, because you know where they're headquartered, right? Clearwater, Florida. So
hell yes, right, where all the flim flam men in America are headquartered, somewhere in Florida.
But the other thing is that, you know, Scientologists have the thing they called SPs, suppressive personalities or something like that.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure those are just Jews, right?
No. SPs are anyone that basically criticizes Scientology. It's literally anybody.
Oh, I see. Okay, all right. I get how it works. So it is kind of
like I think there is something to your theory that this was a way for non-Jews to network in Hollywood, intentionally...
In my opinion, that's beyond dispute.
That's so true. I've even had a Negro tell me that before.
Yeah. If you're not Jewish, you have to be Scientologist.
Yeah, and they started doing that because it was a way to generate attention and revenue for the church. But in its current – I mean it's because Jews have helped fund so many anti-Scientology documentaries to shine a light on them. Their fortunes have diminished quite a bit. But they're also just straight up a cult. So.
Well, they are. But I mean, look, I don't think really any religion has – the right to criticize it. I mean, all of them, it doesn't operate that much differently from any other religion, in my view. And when you see people out there evangelizing with Dianetics, evangelizing for Scientology, it's not so different than, you know, people out there with little pamphlets on the Bible or the Bible itself. Usually they just give you little pamphlets with selected verses and such. You know, I used to see a group of people in the subway that had L. Ron Hubbard books, and they were evangelizing for Scientology, and I'm like, I think the structure internally
it's a little bit different.
It is because religions are that we the mainstream religions are exoteric religions. They will tell you what they believe.
Not
straight
Judaism,
up.
That's
the funny thing.
But that's not a religion.
Judaism
isn't a religion. It's a set of dietary and breeding laws. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a race principle, basically,
right,
set of ethics.
Right.
But in Scientology, you have to pay your way to get into the inner doctrine of that, which really no other religion operates that way, unless they have their own esoteric, hermetic, you know, occultic sects within the religion itself. But mainstream religions are exoteric. They'll tell you what you ask a believer who's versed in their religion. They'll tell you what they believe. You ask a Scientologist, depending on what their OT level is, they might not know what they actually believe.
All right. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. But still.
This does remind me though. I was on a hike recently, and I was talking to a gentleman about Mormonism.
Okay, now I'm interested.
Well, it was a fascinating conversation. A very, very smart guy, and he had married someone who was at the time a practicing Mormon, been raised as a Mormon, and he was just describing his experience with that religion, because he kind of went into it as not really fully religious, had a little bit of a church background, but he was basically very politely saying, hey, this religion is basically bullshit, and it's founded on insanity and craziness, but it has Judaism
for Anglos, basically.
It has all these trappings of being like part of the Christian faith. It's a cargo cult version of like the Christian faith, and being in that environment is of course pretty wild, because you have to go along with this and you're like, this is nuts.
Well, this is actually a great point. This is a great point you bring up, because Mormonism kind of bridges that, in terms of like a sociological structure, bridges that gap between Scientology and Judaism, because Mormonism went through very similar things that Scientology went through, and the religion, I mean, if you're non-Mormon, they call us Gentiles. Like, you look at the way that they were allowed to basically just rip off non-Mormons, and the way that they treated anyone.
They rip each other.
I mean, there is
off
a reason. Yeah, they're the only group in the United States, in American history, that has gotten an actual literal extermination order. Lil Burn Boggs in Missouri issued a extermination order. It's like, Mormons, get the hell out of our state or we are going to kill you. And there were some Mormons that refused to leave, and they slaughtered them. They said, okay, you stuck around. We're getting rid of you right now.
You know who would have done that? Hitler.
Yeah.
He might have.
Christian religions, there's usually some kind of theological basis, some kind of orthodoxy, but it's not really how it works with Mormonism. Mormonism is just sort of an illusion that they cast. Oh, look, we're just another type of Christian.
But they're Mormon, and
he even said, he was like, they're not Christians.
No, they're not.
Like,
I want to hear what Mike says here. I can actually explain that, though.
Well, years ago, I didn't know this when I was a little kid, and I used to see the commercials on TV for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, my grandmother one time mentioned, you know, these people, because she lived in Arizona in her retirement years. My grandparents lived there. And so they ran into more Mormons out there than you would in, say, you know, Lake Hubert, Minnesota. So, you know, she's like, they're not Christians. They're not. And I didn't understand. I was like 10 years old. I was like, I thought they were. But, you know, something I learned is that Joseph Smith, went around to during the days when they first started digging up Egyptian relics. They didn't know what hieroglyphs meant. They couldn't translate.
Oh, I love the story.
Right. So you know what I'm going to say, right? So they didn't know what they meant, but they had dug up relics, and of course, white people being the evil colonialists that we are, British and American archaeologists and explorers, and oftentimes literally just became grave robbers. And we're just – now we have all these systems in place, and there's all these laws, and the Egyptian government is involved, and there's a whole antiquity section of that government to control all of this. And, you know, people would just go over there and, like, take stuff, like take relics from the ancient world and bring them back to America, and then just drive around America. You know, horse and buggy people would just ride around America with these traveling menageries, these traveling shows of Egyptian relics. And nobody knew what this stuff was. It was old and it looked really cool and crazy and very well preserved. And Joseph Smith got his hands on a papyrus scroll. And he said, this is the Book of Abraham. It's a lost book of the Bible, or a lost book from that era, documenting something about Abraham. And if you look at it on the papyrus, there's a large, rather large figure. Clearly, the subject matter of the writing, and there's other people around him serving him, and you know how hieroglyph scrolls look, etc. You can even look up the Book of Abraham in Mormonism. You can see a picture of it, or redrawing representation of it with all the areas that have faded or are damaged, like filled in, etc. And nobody knew what it said, so he just made it up. And the Book of
Abraham. He called it Reformed Egyptian. Yeah, he called it Reformed Egyptian. He actually made up his own term for the fake language.
It's not even clear that he went so far as to really pretend any words that he wrote corresponded to any particular thing in the text that he had. It was just he just made something up, and it was called the Book of Abraham. And I believe I've known a few Mormons in my time, and I've asked them about this, and they're like, "No, we're still supposed to basically believe in that," even though. Yeah. Later on, Howard Carter, the famous British Egyptologist, actually managed to learn how to translate hieroglyphs with the help of the Rosetta Stone and such. But there was other work that was done other than just that. But yes, but that was Howard Carter, I believe, that found that.
What's funny about that is because a lot of that stuff was thought to have been lost in the 19th century, the stuff that Joseph Smith had. And it was thought to have been lost in the Chicago fire, the papyrus, and it was rediscovered in the 20th century. And then the Mormon church was like,
Howard Carter is the one that found King Tut's intact tomb, which was the last intact tomb of any Egyptian pharaoh, which is why King Tut is such a thing in our culture, even though to them he wasn't really much of anything because
he was a minor pharaoh.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting about King Tut is he was the son of Akhenaten, who was a
of Akhenaten.
He was the son of Akhenaten. Pharaoh Akhenaten, who was a heretic. He was. Well, think about this: Akhenaten and Akhenaten have a lot in common. They're both black. No, Akhenaten probably wasn't black, but they're both heretics against the orthodoxy of the time. And get this, here's another one. What did Akhenaten say? He went against the major Egyptian religion to say, no, the true God is the sun disk. And Akhenaten talks about the sun man.
Yeah, so sun god, the sun god people.
The sun disk and the sun man. Yeah, yeah. No, there's a definite historical link. It's not Barack Obama who's the reincarnation of Akhenaten. It's literally Akhenaten.
This works. This works better than I thought it was going to work.
Yeah, no, Alex, look, again, when you're, you know, synchronicity is a funny thing, right? It's a hell of a thing when you just make up shit. That's basically what that means. Just make up connections that don't really exist.
So that's how Joseph Smith basically functioned. I mean, it's funny that he was pulling that Reformed Egyptian crap just less than a decade or so before they would finally translate the hieroglyphics. So, yeah. But Alex, you were talking about like how they don't really operate like other Christian churches. That's because in small O Orthodox Christianity, it's basically there's no more revelations. There's not another prophet coming who's allowed to change the doctrine or anything like that. They hammered it out. It's set in stone. It's not supposed to change. You're not supposed to have somebody come over and say like, well, here's the new covenant. Here's the New Testament. Well, that's already been settled. Mormons actually have their church, and to this day, they still have this. They can change their doctrine at will because they just have a revelation. They're a revelation-based church. Which is very unusual because most Christian churches have kind of moved away from that.
Oh my God, it's the meme source. I just made it up.
Yeah. No, that's how they got rid of polygamy. Basically, the United States government says, do you want Utah to be incorporated to the United States? Get rid of polygamy. And suddenly the president of the church had a revelation. It's like, okay, God says we got to stop doing polygamy now. Literally, that's how it works. That's how it works. You can look at so many doctrines that Mormonism has abandoned over its 150-year history, and the same thing with black people. They had a revelation like, okay, black people, they've done their time for
Yeah, that's really funny because they were basically saying that they could never be – because it was just racism. It was basically just the standard racism of the time that everybody had that Joseph Smith had where they just didn't want blacks around, so he made up some reason, and now they have to deal with that, and they've just said, oh, yeah, that's just not true. But look at this. Look at this. So here's the Book of Abraham papyrus. Let me move it up a bit. So it looks like there might be some penis washing going on here. you see that? You see that? You see how he's lying in his back, and it's kind of cut off right there, right where the penis washing would be happening?
Yeah.
So it looks like a black slave was washing Abraham's penis.
That's actually sound considering the amount of ritual washing that goes on in Mormon rituals, well, or at least it used to. That's be on point right there.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing about the actual Book of Abraham and what the actual like Egyptologists have found about it is that it is just a document of the running of the estate of a wealthy Egyptian man.
Yeah, it's of historical interest insofar as all papyrus is of historical interest, but there's no theological significance other than showing a ritual that's in the papyrus
that
Joseph Smith bought.
What this actually probably shows here is the embalming of a dead body, because you see these four canopic jars at the bottom. See those four jars. See the body is there on the table. Somebody's working on it, and those four canopic jars are where they put various types of organs when they would embalm a body in Egypt. Very important in there. So that might only be the religious ritual significance. But if this was a wealthy Egyptian, he would have had that done anyway, just because he was rich, and that's what rich Egyptians did. He probably didn't have a pyramid, but he would have had an elaborate tomb, and that's probably where this papyrus was stolen from.
Technically, Book of Abraham's still Mormon doctrine, as you said, but Mormons have slowly been walking this back.
Yeah,
They're slowly walking it back now.
Yeah, I actually, you know, you can kind of tell that I was very much interested in the ancient world. I mean, people that have been longtime listeners of this show know that I was briefly a major in my college, but, you know, I've also just personally acquired lots of knowledge about it, because it's so much more interesting than any other part of history. Partly because there's so much, like, a lot of stuff you don't know, so you can kind of just, like, make shit up. Like, you can fill in the gaps.
Like Joseph Smith.
Yes.
You know, I'm somewhat of an Egyptologist myself.
Yeah, I'm somewhat of a, like, to fill in the gaps of ancient world knowledge with my own personal theories that appeal to my biases myself. Like, I love the story of how Caligula wasn't actually a bad guy. Like, he actually wasn't bad. It's all just lies made up by like, scheming courtiers.
This guy was basically saying that whenever you first get into the Mormon church, they have like a veneer of sort of being like any other denomination and having a lot of logic and rationality about them.
What religion does that? I guess
You know what I mean. It looks like, oh, no, we got everything hammered out here. No, we have a method to our madness here. But he was saying that you know there's weird stuff in the church, and you're like, well, maybe that'll make sense as I become more familiar with their customs. And then you become more familiar with their customs, and you're like, this is insanity. Like, this is just irrational. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Part of the anointing ritual that was basically inducting you into the church, and this is something that Mormon children had to go through, and it was a very – like, they finally got rid of this around year 2000. But you basically were engaged in a pageantry where you reenacted your own death, essentially. It's part of the whole theological story, and like they're having kids go through this, and yeah, it was like for that's
Wait
why like, we, it's interesting talking about ex-Mormons. They have a lot of traumatic memories with the stuff.
Is it worse than baptism? I mean, I best back is if you're a little baby and they just splash water on
you.
They still baptize you so that you won't go to hell when you die, though. I mean, that's why you get baptized.
Well, baptism, though, even if you go, like, get a good Southern Baptist baptism in a river somewhere, they're still just going to dunk you under the water a little bit.
No, I understand, but the whole point of it is you don't go to hell when you die, so it's still related to when you're going to die.
I do remember as a kid thinking about that, about baptism, being baptized by some preacher, be like, oh my God, so some strange man is going to like hold me under the water in a fucking river?
Well, see, I actually have more respect for the churches that wait till you're an adult so you can make your own choice and then you go dunk in a river.
Mike comes out as Anabaptist.
Well, look, I was baptized, okay? I don't remember it. I was also circumcised. I mean, that's the weirdest of all. There's no question there. Is. Circumcised is like the craziest, and it's not even religious. It's like, it's funny that circumcision is stuck around, and it has these issues of like, you know, they don't know exactly it has these issues of like, why do we do this? And since no one can actually justify it in the modern world, they come up with incredibly awful pseudo-medical reasons, pseudo-psychological and pseudo like, well, it will be bad for your penis not to look like your dad's penis. And I'm like, that never made any sense to me. I'm like, what, are you sitting around comparing penises with your father a lot? I mean, look, I could see in the course of 20 years living in a house, 18 years living in a house with somebody, maybe occasionally you might bump into each other without your clothes on or something. These things happen. But like, the idea that you would like be comparing, hey, dad, let's just put them side by side. Oh, mine's different. Why? Now I'm damaged. Like, that doesn't.
Yeah, like I pointed out, the problem with that, too, is that assumes you only have one son. And if you've got multiple kids, they're uncircumcised. Hey, congratulations. Now you're the weird guy.
Yeah, right. When the weekly penis comparison ritual happens, you're the one that feels embarrassed.
Well, I found it interesting that the anecdotal stories you had of people who were having it pushed on them, because we got the sigh of relief. I've been hearing different stories, and I guess it really does depend on where
I think it's regional.
This happens.
We I think got, in New York, there's
yeah, we got the sigh. Yeah, we got the sigh of relief, sigh of relief that we weren't doing it from the nurses when my son was born. But I can definitely see people in New York getting the high pressure sales pitch.
I have a story that relates to a friend of mine, and I'm not going to say who it is to protect the innocent. And the story of when his son was born, that the obstetrician was Jewish and did not treat it like it was a question, but did not treat it as if it was going to be something easy and no problem. He presented it as it's an assumed thing. It's going to happen. It's also it's like the way he presented it was like, here's this, oh, and the circumcision, how are we going to handle that? And when do you want to do that? How do you want to handle that? And like gave them some options, but never was not doing it an option.
There is a weird thing to comment on, which is that you don't really see any kind of like media attention given to circumcision and why we're still doing it, why this is barbaric.
Yet they do the Tuskegee thing, which we'll talk about in a second.
Because you'd think this would be something they talk about. Like, why are we still doing genital mutilation in the United States? Isn't that kind of fucked up?
I'm having a funny flashback now to when we got, because Mike was saying that there was, they had to invent all these pseudo psychological, pseudo scientific reasons for getting it. Now I'm remembering the pamphlet that we got, because when you have a kid at hospitals, they typically give you a lot of literature when you're making these choices. And we got a pamphlet on circumcision, and there were all of these reasons for why not circumcising is good. And then they were padding it as much as possible because it's just so obviously lopsided. They were trying to invent reasons why you might want to consider circumcision. And it's just so funny looking at it is that they're struggling to even justify it themselves in the literature that they give you to help you make an informed choice.
Cleanliness is another fake reason. If you bathe daily or even every other day, like, you're fine. Like, literally, and how hard is it to wash your penis. Like, that's it. Like, all you have to do, just peel it back, get under there with some soap, you're good. No big deal.
Conservatives invented Jordan B. Peterson, so we're fine. The penis washing is now taken care of.
It's like, as a conservative, I have all kinds of hang-ups about genitals generally, so I don't even want to touch a penis. Like, it's really difficult to just, like, it's traumatic to even have to touch my own penis and pull back the forces and wash underneath the folds there. That's the tough thing. They're very difficult.
The latest article I could find about this is like from a year ago, and it says, defying science, American parents are turning away from male circumcision.
Defying science?
The science is settled.
Wait, you have to read this article now. Where is this?
Here, I'll post it in the chat. They're going to list some bullet points. Even after they have to make
I'm very
concession
curious about these bullet points, because I don't see why it would be scientific. Well, I don't see why you would
I'm going to use my incredibly big brain and predict.
Big think. We're gonna be fucking around with
relative risk versus absolute.
Peter
risk.
Thiel has funded. It was an angel investor for this website.
Oh yes, I remember that. Yeah, this is this is a ThielNet site.
So. Perfect.
Okay, so this is written by Ross Pomeroy. That's a Jew. That's a Jewish name. I'm almost positive. That's. Am I right? Am I right on this board's line? Am I off base here?
I'm going to. I have no reason to doubt you on this one. He does look pretty Jewish. We're looking at his picture here.
Let's take a look here.
This is Twitter. Yeah, if you click on his little profile, you'll see it. I tend to be cautious of physiognomy checks because there's a lot of false positives. But feeling pretty good on this one.
There are some. This guy's not so bad that it's unequivocal, but he's good, and also what he's writing on. So yeah, there are physiognomy checks are unreliable. I agree, but there are some that are so open. The case is so open and shut. This one isn't totally open and shut, but there are open and shut cases.
He wrote an article in 2015 called "What Could a Jewish Time Traveler Eat?" He's Jewish.
Yeah, he's Jewish. He's Jewish. Yeah, you don't write those kind of like particular interest Jewish pieces. Anyway, let's take a look.
All right. Let's look at the benefits. A large reduction in urinary tract infections, which affect 1 in 12 circumcised males over their lifetime compared to 1 in 3 uncircumcised males. Well, I don't know. I am circumcised. I've had UTIs. UTIs are not usually a big deal. Usually you're going to see that in elderly populations anyway.
Here's my question. Is there actual evidence in terms of like a replicable studies being done that not being circumcised leads to or is at least correlated with a greater degree of UTIs, or is it just all theory selling?
Well, he's looking into a systematic review, and I don't want to go digging too deep in systematic review.
My point is this. Here's my point in saying that. I want us and the audience to learn to think like that, right? Because that's how, as I've started to increasingly think like that, I found like so many things are just bullshit, as we know. So, yeah. We welcome to the true skeptic community here. That's what we are, the actual skeptic community. And I don't believe any of this shit anymore. I just don't believe it. If you tell, I need some kind of proof, given how many things Jews have just lied about. But let's press forward.
Large reduction, Ballantantis? Ballantis?
Okay. Ballantis. First of all,
painful.
Let's back up a little bit. It starts here. It says, it's not hip to nip the tip. This is the real concern of this Jew. This is the real concern of this Jew, that in fact, certain types of Gentile ethics about treatment of people and innocent creatures and young innocent babies and the idea of not doing harm and the idea of, frankly, casting aside, superstition, is actually making this Jewish practice, which is a Jewish practice associated with Judaism. There's nothing in Christianity that says you have to do it. People do it, and as we said, circumcision is really only widely practiced in English-speaking and Protestant countries where Jews have the most power. So circumcision being practiced is strongly correlated to Jewish power and control over the society that it exists in. And it's also strongly correlated to English speakers and to Protestantism, but all of these things are related. So this is what they're actually concerned about. That and if you remember, we were talking about that show with Jason Bateman about that religious. Actually, this was not on the show. I forget if I was talking about this on the show or not. I was talking about this with Jesse and some people last weekend at a party that we were at, and we were talking about that show with Jason Bateman. That was like that weird, crazy rich family that kept messing things up, and it was a comedy. What was that called? Anyone remember?
Oh, Arrested Development.
Right, that show. I only caught like a few episodes of that show in my life, but in one of them, like the crazy activist sister, the crazy liberal, rich, like clueless liberal activist sister of Jason Bateman is like big on circumcision or big on anti-circumcision as her cause. And she's presented as like a lunatic. And this is another thing where they're like trying to insert into the popular consciousness the idea of an anti-circumcision activist as this clueless, out-of-touch, wealthy, limousine liberal who just flits from cause to cause and doesn't really have a direction, etc. So this is what Jews are concerned with. The thing that Jews have done, have instituted on a society, just isn't cool anymore. And so people just aren't thinking about that. It says, over the past few decades... Yes?
Yeah, go ahead. Keep reading.
Over the past few decades, as new American parents have grown uncomfortable with the idea of severing a piece of their child's body. Yes, justly so, rightly so, they become uncomfortable with this. Minor though it may be, this is understandable from an ethical perspective. A newborn baby cannot consent to such an unalterable act. Anti-circumcision activists argue that it is better to forego the procedure in infancy and allow the child to make his own decision later on. As a result of this intuitive reasoning, rates of circumcision have fallen from about 85% in 1965 to 58% in 2010. That is not a minor drop, my friend. He's saying minor though it may be. No, that's a pretty large drop.
That's enormous.
Yeah. The last year for which solid data is available. Parents, however, also have the responsibility to do what's best for their child, even if that decision causes personal. So he's trying to get people back into doing it, and it's very interesting to me that this is being done in a I think you were saying a Thiel, at least partially Thiel funded publication. And evidence.
He was a angel investor for the website. I don't think he owns it or anything like that, yeah, but yeah. I know he, because the big thing I remember this because I made fun of the name because it used to be a meme. Big think there. They used to do Eat the Bugs articles, and I looked into who was investing.
This is a schizo site. This is a right wing schizo site. Here, I go to their homepage, and this top story says, "With Thanobots, ChatGPT is making it possible to talk to the dead."
Well, if they're doing right wing schizo stuff now, that's not what they were doing years ago. This is by the same kike.
AI programs like ChatGPT can create Thanobots based on deceased loved ones' digital communication, allowing us to talk with the departed. There's no way in hell I would ever do that. You feed all your chats and texts with someone who died, and you can talk to them again. That would make me so. One, it's creepy. Two, it would just make me sad.
Wait, that's the plot of that Battlestar Galactica spinoff, Caprica. That they did that in there.
I never watched more than the first.
They had a character. Yeah, they created an artificial consciousness, and what they did is they scraped all the social media and surveillance camera footage of a particular person and then just recreated their personality out of that.
Yeah, no, this is all
If they're doing right-wing stuff now, they weren't doing that a few years ago because they were promoting stuff like eating bugs. The big thing was where you'd play videos.
God damn it.
It used to be like this is the site that schizos would point to as being like they're telling you the big plan type stuff.
Yeah. So the.
This is... Oh my God! Here's the true Judaism. This is another one. We all have to read this later when we're done with circumcision. Hitler, Churchill, and the real trolley problem.
I saw that one.
This sounds like something. This sounds something relevant to my interests. One.
Well, and look at the name, Brian Klass.
Yeah, no, Klass. This is all Jewish stuff, right? So he's going to basically. Oh man, I have a feeling I know what's going to go on here. But let's press forward with the circumcision.
There's a couple problems here so far. First of all, this feels very in tension with the other idea that your child can choose their.
I did too.
Yeah,
it's, their gender identity, right? Like you're supposed to have autonomy to make those kinds of decisions, but you're going to get your penis nipped even if you do decide to cut it off later. And the other thing with circumcision, right? You could always get it done later if you wanted to. Why is it so important to push it for babies?
You could, but I'm just not convinced of this. So he says,
Are they pushing it for babies because they know that no rational human male is ever going to voluntarily get this shit done when they're an adult?
Yes. I think that's part of it.
They get the occasional UTI, they'll be like, huh, I could occasionally get a minor urinary tract infection, which usually resolves itself or may require a small dose of antibiotics. I could deal with that, or I could cut the end of my fucking penis off.
Well, one.
Wow, hard choice.
Also, supposedly, here's the thing. There have been people who have gotten circumcised in adulthood, and apparently it is incredibly painful and traumatic to do so. But I'm like, okay. I'm not convinced that it's easier when you're a baby. It's just the baby can't talk.
Yeah, she just can't remember.
You can only scream, which they do.
Yeah.
So this guy has also written on DMT and the rise of transgender transition.
It's all connected. It's all the stuff we've been talking about. Yeah. So he loves the idea. He's like, listen, get circumcised, take drugs, and then if you're sad because someone you know died, just put all their text messages into ChatGPT and you can continue to hallucinate that they exist. No, this is exactly where like the Thiel Wright, you know, wants you to be while these kikes. And Thiel isn't, but some reason he's in bed with them, probably through money, intelligence, and God knows what else.
Oh, I'm going to go to a couple of these bullet points here. 15 to 50% lower risk of prostate cancer. Okay, so what he's doing right here is he's lying by omission. He's not telling you that's a relative risk. Look at the first paragraph where he cannot find
a smoking gun that this guy is Jewish, but he obviously is to me.
This guy's a Jew.
And in the first paragraph, but in the first paragraph of this circumcision essay, he plays it off like he's just regular white guy who weighed the options and concluded, you know, I think circumcision is good. Like, look at the way he presents himself in the first paragraph.
Oh wait, I haven't read this. Let's read. So it says, "My wife and I are currently expecting our first child in late October, a boy, and we recently started discussing whether or not to circumcise. For those unaware, circumcision is surgical removal of the foreskin covering the tip of the penis. I entered this discussion in favor, but with no strong feelings either way. Bullshit. However, after researching the scientific literature and expert opinion, I came out firmly for the procedure and frankly somewhat frustrated at the recent trend." No, this is all because you're a kike. You're a kike, and kikes want other... You know why? You want to know what I actually think? I think that that whole thing of you need to do it so that you don't look different than your father is you need to do it so you don't look different than a fucking Jew.
Yeah, you just want to hide, basically. And frankly, hide within a population.
I'll tell you this. The Romans, this is something I do know from ancient history. The Romans, you know how they used to figure out who was a Jew? They'd pull their toga off. I'm not joking.
I mean, it's obvious.
Let's look at the penis. Let's see. What's the penis? Oh, yeah, this guy's a kite.
Let's see your dick.
Let's do the penis comparison here. Oh, well, here we have another one. Yeah. We got one.
Penis inspection day was rough in the Roman Empire.
Yeah. Penis inspection day was a tough time. The historical trauma of it lasts to this day, and it keeps Ross Pomeroy up at night. But no, they actually do. This is part of it. And also, there's, of course, the idea that, you know, they feast on them for the benefit of their demon god to stay, you know, but that's different. You know, that's just a thing, right? You know? I mean, I don't really believe that, but I mean, I almost do.
So he's thinking about this just makes me hate Jews more because it's like, you fuckers are the reason I got genitally mutilated and I don't actually resemble my pagan ancestors.
It absolutely makes me hate them, and it makes me hate them the way they present and the way they lie about it and the fact that they're. I think this medical benefit stuff is nonsense or marginal, basically.
It's marginal at best, but I hate how people lie and they'll say 50% lower risk. It's like you're not talking about absolute risk. You're not saying that the chance of me getting prostate cancer drops in half. You're talking about relative to the general prevalence of it. It gets cut down some.
Right.
But my general chances of getting prostate cancer are probably pretty low to begin with.
But I'm also not convinced he's got a causal link there or like
how strong this evidence is.
Seriously.
When he gets down to HIV, up to 70% lower rate of contracting HIV. Though this was derived from studies conducted in Africa. The reduction in the U.S. is probably lower, potentially.
Well, let me tell you something. You know how you really don't get HIV? You don't be a faggot.
Yeah.
You be a white male that has vaginal intercourse with white women, and you won't get HIV.
Right. You almost certainly won't.
And you can even have more than one partner. You don't even have to restrict yourself just to one. I mean, over the course of your life, you know what I mean? You know what I mean.
Yeah. 50% lower risk of contracting genital human papillomavirus, PPV is what that's called. That's something that's really more a problem for girls.
That's another girl issue. Yeah.
And the lesson there is don't be a whore, I guess. Don't be a he-whore either. This is my favorite. This is my absolute favorite right here. A greatly reduced risk of penile cancer, even though it is rare. The lifetime risk is approximately 1 in 1,000 for an uncircumcised man versus 1 in 50,000 for a circumcised man. So less than a tenth of a percent, which to most people is not going to matter. And I like the logic here, right? Because this is great. It's like, you know, if you cut your little finger off, it can't get cancer. You should just chop that sumbitch off right now. You can effectively reduce your chance of getting a finger cancer to zero.
Penile cancer, you won't get it if you have no penis. Trannies, yeah. You know, post-op trannies have zero incidence of penile cancer.
Yeah.
Zero. So, yeah. This is just...
I mean, really looking at it, like, trying to be fair and balanced here in terms of, like, the benefits and cost of this procedure, it's like... You might get some significant reduction in certain types of fungal and bacterial infections, but those infections themselves are usually minor, usually very treatable, and they tend to affect you more if you're in bad health, if you're elderly, et cetera. So in terms of this cost-benefit thing he's talking about, I don't see why you would really want to be circumcised unless you were super bothered by it, and then you could always get done later.
I have another question. How much can – we should do some other studies. So in terms of certain fungal or bacterial infections you can get, how much can you reduce the chance of those infections with basic hygiene? So should we not compare people that wash their penis versus non-penis washers?
The Jordan Petersons of the world.
Yeah, penis washers versus non-washers. I'll bet you get a much more significant statistical effect from that.
Could even be the other way around. Maybe people are washing their penises too much and they're getting rid of the infection.
Maybe you need to cool it with the penis washing.
However, the idea that I get some sort of like minor and like, oh, I got an ingrown toenail, so I chop my fucking toe off. Like,
yeah. Or I've got like the yellow toe fungus. Oh, off comes the toe. You know, it's like, yeah, which is actually fucking impossible to get rid of that shit unless you that's probably better to live with that than just to get the treatment for it, because the treatment
the thing is a lot of people, if you asked them, hey, would you like to chomp off your little toe or cut off the end of your genitals, they'd be like, okay, I guess I'm gonna lose the toe.
Yeah, off goes the toe. Yeah,
it's funny you mentioned that. My father's missing. My father got electrocuted and is missing half a toe, so he's always had ever since I was a kid, he had a little nubbling toe.
Can he like not?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably preferable to losing your penis.
Does he like fall down a lot? Is he like off balance a lot? Because aren't your toes even if you lose your little toe, you'll find yourself like teetering more because you know you need that to balance. Anyway, I don't know. That's just
maybe you had phantom toe syndrome.
My toe itches. But it's not there. Oh man, that would be absolute hell. I can't even imagine what that would be like.
I love how kikes like to do this shit where they render everything into like this clinical medical cold analysis. It's like, hey, we're talking about somebody's fucking penis here, cutting off the end of their penis.
Here is where this actually now is like the ultimate in like really pissing me off. In 2012. The fact they dedicated time and effort to this, public health researchers at Johns Hopkins tallied the national cost of falling circumcision rates in the United States. If U.S. male circumcision rates among men born in the same year dropped to European rates, there would be an expected 12% increase in men infected with HIV. That's 4,843 more faggots that get AIDS.
Right, because we're obfuscating who's getting these diseases.
Right, it's
people
that's
who are making
thing.
Bad decisions.
29% more men infected with human papillomavirus. That's 57,124. 19% increase in men infected with herpes simplex, 124,767. And a 211% jump in the number of infant male urinary tract infections, 26,876. Among their female sex partners, there would be 50% more cases each of bacterial vaginosis. Well, that's something I just don't care about. Well, women, that doesn't matter at all. Right?
That affects black women more than white women.
500. I also wonder if like that's another factor here of like, let's break down these numbers. First of all, one thing, another thing is, these are projections, okay? These numbers that Johns Hopkins came up with are projections. They're not real. They're made up. They literally made up. Now, they might have some basis for making them up, but they don't know, okay? You gotta understand, like, as the true skeptic community here, the Daily Skeptic, you know, I don't buy when scientists make projections. Because, one, I know there's an agenda, just like with global warming. The global warming projections, which are ridiculous, are based on an agenda. This is based on an agenda. How many top researchers at Johns Hopkins are Jewish? A lot. and trichomoniasis, you get 64,585 more cases of this. The number of new infections with the high-risk form of human HPV, closely linked to cervical cancer, would increase by 18%, 33,148 more infections. So now, I'm wondering, how much of this is racial disparities in because of hygiene and things like that and different issues and laziness? And how much of it is also just made up projections? Because I think it is. A lot of this is just made up.
Yeah, remember, right.
Projections are scientists making things up. And I'm not anti-science. I'm pro-science. But agenda-driven science that makes projections, I don't believe you. I'm sorry. I just don't. Fuck off. Flaccid objections. Critics contend that male circumcision reduces sexual pleasure, leading to regret that causes harm and frequently results in adverse outcomes, and that it can easily be performed later in life at the son's own choice. Accumulated evidence counters all these objections. High-quality studies show no difference in sexual function and potentially increased penile sensitivity after circumcision. Maybe that's why Jews did it, started doing it all those years ago. It probably fucking is. It probably is why they started doing it. Lastly, as Australian scientists wrote in 2019, compared to circumcision later in life, infant circumcision is simpler, quicker, less expensive, with lower risk of complication, healing is faster, and the scar can be almost invisible. There are substantial barriers to later circumcision. These barriers include the decision process, peer pressure, affordability, slower healing, pain.
Whoa, hold up a second. He said the decision process.
Right, meaning someone actually.
I'm able to use my brain and rationally.
Yeah, I'm not like a helpless infant anymore.
Fuck.
Slower healing, pain during erections, the need to abstain from sexual activity for 6 weeks, and a visible scar afterwards.
I'm sorry, this article is monstrous. Whenever you're at the point where you say decision-making process, you are saying, I want to violate your autonomy.
I like it that the baby can't make a decision. And I'm able to gaslight parents, too, yeah. Anyway, I don't buy it. And it's still, like, none of this overrides the fundamental precautionary principle, which is, like, it's better not to do something if you don't have to than it is to do.
Well, he's already running into some problems here. This is some typical lying here. So you're fucking around by not telling people what the absolute risk value is versus trying to deceive the relative risk. And then down here you say 0.4% have complications. Now, that's an absolute value. So if I were to switch all these values, he's got a pure to absolute value. Suddenly that risk versus benefit calculation changes completely.
Oh, wow. Yeah. 0.4% of infant adverse events occur in 0.4% of infant circumcision procedures. Wow. That's almost 1 out of 200. That's almost 1 out of every 200 circumcisions. That's really bad.
Yeah.
That's very bad.
Let's see here. Because you're also looking at, let's say, roughly 1% risk for prostate cancer. Yeah, this changes the calculation quite a bit.
Yeah, significantly. So what
that changes it quite a bit. Because then if you're saying, okay, well, you could reduce your 1% risk to 0.5% risk, but that's about exactly equal to your risk of having a complication during
the article he links to. National Library of Medicine, rates of adverse events associated with male circumcision, U.S. medical settings 2001 to 2010. What's the abstract? Over 1.4 million male circumcisions are performed annually in the U.S. medical setting. Population-based estimates of male circumcision-associated adverse events are lacking objective. To estimate the incidence rate of male circumcision-associated adverse events and assess whether adverse events rate differed by age of circumcision. We selected 41 possible male circumcision events based on literature review and medical billing codes. We estimated a likely risk window for incidence calculation for each male circumcision adverse event based on pathogenesis, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so what's the results? Records were available for 1,400,920 circumcised males, 93.3% as newborns. Of the 41 possible male circumcision adverse events, 16.39% were probable. Incidence of total male circumcision adverse event was slightly less than 0.5%. Rates of potentially serious male circumcision adverse events range from 0.76 per million male circumcision for stricture of male genital organs to 703.23 per million male circumcision for repair of incomplete circumcision. Compared to males circumcised at less than 1 year of age, the incidence was approximately 20 and tenfold greater for males circumcised between 1 and 9 years and those greater than 10 years of age. So it seems the risks of these things grow as the baby gets older, but these are non-trivial numbers here.
Yeah, the problem is that they compare right up against because the biggest risk that he's got listed here is prostate cancer, right? And your adverse event risk is very comparable to your actual risk of getting prostate cancer. So it starts to look more and more like a kind of a coin flip. Like, well, do you want to basically become a eunuch and not get prostate cancer?
Right. And it seems like adverse events are like,
and failure yet again,
the actual failure of the procedure itself, like it was incomplete, or like they fucked it up, or they fucked up the penis. It's like, you know what, the risk of fucking up the penis is just too high. It's
when we get down to this level of risk assessment, we're down in the weeds on like 1% versus 0.5%. That's something that an adult needs to decide for themselves, not a fucking baby that can't say yes or no.
And not a parent who is being gaslit by a Jewish...
By Jews.
Yeah. Because no matter what, when it's not you, it's easier to make the decision, even if it's your baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No matter what.
Yeah. Your instincts are on point as usual, Mike, because I'm looking at this guy's Twitter, Stephen Ross Pomeroy, and he last year he was retweeting articles about, why are conservatives happier than liberals and stuff like that. It's he's definitely approaching this from the conservative angle with his articles.
Well, they're more happy because their dicks are all chopped off. Right? Because liberals are the ones that are more likely, based on ethical concerns, to not do it, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually the... I mean, that's how it was portrayed in... that show, and also, like, the inter-activists, as they call it, like, the intact activists, you know, inter-activists. That was considered, like, at least it was presented in the media by Jews as, like, a harebrained, lip-tarded thing, right? So, yeah.
Listen to this. This is a tweet from when the Ukraine war started. That far-right provocateurs in the U.S. and Putin's regime tout Russia as a Christian nation and extol the war as protecting Christians is laughable. 87% of Ukrainians practice Christianity. If anything, this is a war on Christians.
That's such a lie. Oh, and you know what else those people say? The fact is, neither Ukraine nor Russia are particularly religious, even though Russia does have Orthodoxy as an official state religion. But in terms of the actual people in the country, it's actually fairly similar to the West. I think Ukraine would probably be less religious. Also, the Ukrainian Orthodox Church is basically a suspect organization in Ukraine now because they're worried that they're actually Russian sympathizers, and they've literally been like arresting people out of churches and shit like that in Ukraine.
That's why they created the I always forget how to pronounce the word autocephalous church. That's basically in schism with some of the other Eastern Orthodox churches. Basically, in Ukraine, you have two Orthodox churches. You have the traditional Orthodox Church, which is more aligned with Russia, and that's the one they're really heavily persecuting. Then there's this one that Poroshenko created that they're trying to get that's a Ukrainian state approved, essentially.
Frankly, I'm surprised they're not just trying to introduce some kind of Protestantism there, because like that's what works or not works, but that's something they do. Think about this.
Well, 2% of the population is Protestant, so
yeah, they could do it. But what is this now? There's one Slavic country that's Protestant. Which one is it? And what's their role historically?
Slavic Protestant the Czechs. Country.
Czechs are Protestant.
I thought the Czechs were Catholic. Well,
it's
every Czech
significantly
I've known was Catholic.
Protestant. The country is significantly Protestant. We can look that up. But Protestantism has deeper roots in the Czech, not Czechoslovakia, but the Czechs, than it does anywhere else in the Slavic world. And what's the draw of the Czechs historically? So, yeah. Anyway. But not like religion isn't that big of a factor really in any of these countries. I mean, Russia has an official state Orthodoxy religion, but it still has relatively low rates of people going to church, probably comparable with the United States.
Yeah, the Czechs were 80% Catholic in 1921.
Oh, what are they now? What were they in 1941?
Well, like they're majority like non-religious now. I'm looking at the religion in Czech Republic in 2021. No religion, 47.8%. Catholicism, 9.3%. Other Christians, 2.4%. Believers without religion, 9.6%. Undeclared, 30%.
I think me and James have talked about the Czech Republic recently. Yeah, that's right. Because their birth rate is surprisingly not that bad for an extremely atheistic country. Yeah.
There were probably a lot of Protestants in those lands because of Germans that were in those lands. That's probably where the Protestantism.
That blows my theory out of the water. Then actually the Germans kind of blow out the Protestant theory generally. Because Germans are significantly Catholic as well, but what's the actual split there? And what was the split in like 1940?
I don't know what the percentage of Catholics living in Germany were at in the Reich, but I mean I know it's like more of a southern there was a kind of a south north split on
that. That's definitely true. Yeah, but the other thing is the National Socialists absolutely put the kibosh on any kind of religious infighting. Shut the fuck up with that shit.
I can't believe I didn't know this, but the Czech Republic, that region used to be known as Bohemia. These are literal Bohemians.
Yeah. You didn't know that?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yes.
That's where the term honky comes from. It was a term applied to both Hungarians and also bohunks, Bohemians, honky.
So yeah. Yeah, no, there's a whole thing going on over there, but anyway, so I was just wrong. I lied with an agenda, and as it turned out, I was wrong. And since the agenda was driven on religious preferences, of course, it was ultimately completely false. So I'm a liar.
And severely, like, maliciously anti-Christian.
What, for me?
Always.
Yeah, I'm just making fun of people. That's just a default. Detractors.
That's the default.
if you get something wrong about religion, that it's you were actually just being maliciously anti-Christian, Mike.
Well, yeah, because that's our standard.
I was actually almost doing a favor to all the Catholic Spurgs by saying like. I was wrong about that. Anyway.
That actually makes it.
Well, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to press forward.
Well, listen. Here's another tweet that this guy he retweeted. This one. This is at the start of the Ukraine war. Can we finally stop talking about ethnic Russians in Ukraine? They're Russian speaking Ukrainians. You don't call English speaking Irish people ethnic English people in Ireland. Ethnic Russians in Ukraine are Kremlin inventions that have been used to justify aggression. The Russians in Ukraine don't exist.
Can't you reverse this argument? And just say Ukrainians don't exist, they're just Russians, and America is inventing them to spark conflict, or Jews really are inventing them to spark conflict? I mean...
I've seen this argument that the Ukrainians are a German invention.
I've seen the argument that they're a Jewish invention. There's actually a lot more evidence of that.
Just like circumcision.
Basically, Ukrainians were used by both Germans in World War I and then subsequently the Bolsheviks in those revolutions. Ukrainians occupied a very important geographic space in Europe. So basically, anybody who wanted influence there was going to monkey around with the ethnic demographics.
Yeah. Have you heard this bit of revisionism that's funny? I've seen some conservatives try to pitch this, and I don't know where it comes from, but I have seen it where they're saying, like, actually, and the funny thing is, it would have to be a conservative pitching it, because you would have to be really totally not versed in any historical facts about World War II in order to say this, which is that in terms of defeating the Nazis, the Russians really didn't do very much. It was mostly Ukrainians.
I've never heard this.
I've seen it.
Amazing.
It's like I said, you'd have to be a conservative to say it, because one, it hits, there's like certain conservative priors, like anti-communist priors it would hit.
Yeah, right? Yeah, no, I understand. You need to be a conservative.
You'd have to be totally stupid, like just not know any actual thing.
Yeah, because conservatives are missing two things, right? They're missing the end of their penis and a part of their brain.
Yes. They had lobotomies as well as circumcisions. You know, so yeah. Anyway. Just the reasoning center. Just the tip, right? Just the front area. Just the lobe. The frontal lobe where you actually do your thinking. Let's just slice that off, yeah. We don't need that.
Gonna reduce your chances of brain cancer.
Circumlobotomy.
Hey, you can't get brain cancer if you don't have a brain.
Well, didn't they used to? Maybe I'm just falling for like old myths about, you know, this country or whatnot. But didn't they used to be a regular practice to basically just lobotomize people because they're good? Yeah. It could be beneficial. Isn't that what happened to one of the Kennedy sisters?
Yeah, Rose Kennedy was lobotomized and became like a vegetable, and the family had to like hide her away in their mansions because it would become fucking embarrassment.
Looking at what they were doing in medicine, like 100-some years ago,
no, 70 years
fucking
ago. I know. Lobotomies were popular in like the fucking 50s.
Yeah.
Okay. And like lobotomies, I can't even wrap my brain into my intact, as far as I know, intact brain around how the fuck you would ever justify that. Yeah, this person's acting up a bit. Let's slice their brain. What? How the fuck? Like, dude, they don't do it anymore. Like, it's not done anymore. And it was, I was thinking, like, I was hoping. I mean, look, we do tranny surgeries in America. Okay?
They do weird Frankenstein monster
shit to try to turn a man into a woman or vice versa. And they're critical of the regime that did lobotomies. I was thinking at some point maybe we'll have enough. And I mean, the bad outcomes of trainee surgery are like at least half, if not more, probably all when it comes down to it. Ultimately, they all end up bad outcomes, right? Because the surgery itself is a bad outcome. So you have 100% incidence rate of bad outcomes. But it's like the thing with lobotomies, I'm like, I was hoping that training surgery would go the way of the lobotomy eventually and be considered like kind of an embarrassing moment where like a surgical fad went through. And of course, it mainly the lobotomy thing, like poor people didn't get lobotomies. It was actually like a fad trend for like rich people, you know, to do that, which is like, okay, well, at least nobody important was hurt. But like, you know, it was just like a bunch of rich fucks that were dumb enough to do it. So I really don't have much sympathy. But like, you know, I was hoping eventually it would just go that way and be like, okay, so not that I have much sympathy for people that elect to have tranny surgery. They're like vile, perverted scumbags too. And if they hurt themselves, it's a source of humor. But we, as a society, this is a serious harm is being done to the public good here by this even existing, by this even being out there. It's just harming the society in ways that are not quantifiable, but I don't care. And so,
right. And it's like one of the structural critiques with medicine is if you look at modern medicine being like from the 1850s onwards, whatever, it basically looks like a science fiction horror movie the entire time. And yet they now pretend that, oh, we're scientific, we're also clinically minded, and everything that we do is verified by data. I'm like, no, it's not. You're just as barbaric as you've always been.
All they can do is point to Joseph Mengele and say, and make up a bunch of stuff about him and say, well, we're not like that.
No, they're worse than him.
You're far worse.
They are worse than him. Joseph Mengele, as we've documented many times in this program, the worst he did was observe and document people without getting their consent first.
Mm-hmm. That's all I could ever find.
Yeah. And maybe he gave, like, babies and children vaccinations without telling them what was going on.
Oh, okay, now that is barbarism.
But we do that, too.
But we do it because of science.
Okay.
He did it because he was evil.
Yeah. Well, you know what else America did? And, you know, here's another thing. The Holocaust is actually, as we said, those deaths which have been the verifiable deaths, generally speaking, are those from typhus, as we've talked about, right? And of course, Germans also died of typhus. A German doctor whose name was Christian Wirth went to Auschwitz, actually because he was an expert in combating typhus, and he eventually succumbed to typhus himself at Auschwitz. And there's documentary evidence of this. He is now condemned as like a monstrous Nazi doctor doing experiments. It's not true. It's not true at all. He actually was doing his best to combat the epidemic at the Auschwitz camp. But you know what America did? America had DDT, and America had a typhus vaccine. And neither of them did they share with the Germans, because from their perspective, a disease running rampant inside the territory of your enemy is just that's just a military benefit to you.
They were researching how to spread diseases to their enemies. Yeah. They were doing biological warfare research.
Right.
That'd be the specific, like, fuck dropping, like, vaccines on them. They wanted to, like, drop more diseases on them.
And if you want to know about the ethics, now, maybe the Nazis might have actually been a little bit too ethical, and that's why they lost. But, they were even, when the British were approaching the Belsen camp, where Anne Frank died of typhus, the Germans came out to meet them, and they were going to surrender. And they were like, look, we're going to surrender the camp, but you should not come closer without taking precautions, because there's an outbreak at the camp now. We might be infected, and you're going to need to deal with this outbreak when you enter the camp. And we can't do it anymore. We don't have the resources.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that they don't tell you. They actually warned the British coming in that there was currently a health crisis at the camp, and they're going to need to take some kind of precautions and prepare to deal with it when they enter.
Alex, you mentioned that basically allies were developing biological warfare. Well, I had this saved from Stephen Kinzer's book, Poisoner in Chief, which is about Sidney Gottlieb and MKUltra, but he basically kind of catalogs the history of like what led up to this program as well. Merck's memo reached American military commanders as they were considering a top secret request from British Prime Minister Winston Churchill. Intelligence reports, later proven false, had led British leaders to fear that Hitler was planning a bio attack on their island. They decided they needed a store of concentrated pathogens to launch in retaliation if such an attack occurred. Britain did not have the facilities, expertise, or budget to develop these toxins. Churchill asked the Americans for help. Roosevelt agreed to look into the possibility of producing bioweapons for the British and assigned the job to the Army's Chemical Warfare Service. On December 9th, 1942, its commanders convened a group of bacteriologists and other specialists at the National Academy of Sciences in Washington. They posed a question that pushed beyond the edge of known scientific engineering. Would it be possible to build a hermetically sealed container in which deadly germs could be produced on an industrial scale?
Dude, why does this stupid fucking website keep playing this dumb video? In any case, this Hitler, Churchill, and real trolley problem is a six-minute video. We're going to do that next hour. And there's a couple other things I wanted to do next hour. Now, there was one other thing I wanted to do.
So the thing that we did skip over after joking about it is the Ron DeSantis stuff in Florida.
Oh, yeah, we forgot about it. Yeah, let's do that real quick, and we'll do that.
Real fast.
Yeah.
Because I saw libtards screeching and hollering and wailing and gnashing their teeth about this. They acted as if Ron DeSantis has like banned all psychology from Florida, which would be fine.
That would actually make me reconsider slightly. Yeah. But typically, it's probably going to be like something actually that makes everything worse.
But what he has done here, Florida superintendents were advised Thursday by the state to nix their advanced placement psychology classes unless they exclude any topics related to gender or sexuality, according to the College Board. So these are just
I don't believe that. Like, that's the kind of shit. Like, I don't know if we ever got to this. The thing they were accusing him of doing with the slavery thing, with the Black history curriculum in Florida, was telling that, like, Blacks benefited from slavery. Like, this is what he was accused of. Now, that's actually true. Okay, that's actually true. Those slaves that made it across the Atlantic, that didn't die in the slave boats, which I will admit were horrific death traps, for the crew as well as the slaves, those slaves that made it across and made it to plantations in America were better off than niggers in Africa. And their descendants to this day are better off than niggers in Africa. Blacks objectively benefited from slavery. An actual objective curriculum would teach this. However, DeSantis' curriculum doesn't even teach that. All it says is that after they were freed, some slaves went into farming using the skills that they had developed as slaves. I'm like, that's not even true, though. The problem with that is not that it's like saying Blacks benefit from slavery. It's that it's not true. What happened was they all sold their 40 acres and a mule to Jews in exchange for liquor. Which is why they say 40 acres and a mule never happened. That's not true. It happened. Jews just fucking bamboozled you all out of it. Anyway, it's actually saying like industrious slaves after emancipation, like, set themselves up in business using like agricultural skills. It's just not fucking true. But they're saying that, but they're accusing him of saying like Black people benefited from slavery or something like that. And yeah, he's had to defend it, and he defends it, you know, with his like Black girl, you know, that kind of shit. Anyway, this is funny. Let's press forward.
Okay, where was I? Yes.
Yeah, so it looks like basically the Florida Department of Education is in conflict with the College Board. That's essentially what this all is over a curriculum.
Yeah. And because I don't actually trust libtards not to tell me that, like,
yeah, because here's what the College Board is hyperventilating about. They're saying, we are sad to have learned that today the Florida Department of Education has effectively banned AP psychology in the state by instructing Florida superintendents teaching foundational content on sexual orientation and gender identity is illegal under state law, the College Board said.
Yeah, no, that's not. I doubt it. I highly doubt that's an accurate.
But even then, it's not like he's banned the teaching of psychology in Florida.
Well, I want to know what the thing actually says. Because what's funny is, in these disputes, when you have typically the conservatives are telling you the truth, and they say what's actually in the curriculum, and it's like way more cucked than what the liberals are saying. Liberals like go hair on fire as if like they actually make you think DeSantis might be based. Yeah. But then when you actually, when you get the story from, they're like, no, this is actually way more gayer and cucked and stupid than you think.
That's kind of the thing, is if they came out and said, you know what, I think psychology is a pseudoscience that justifies a whole bunch of, frankly, crimes against humanity, and we're just going to ban the practice of psychology in Florida. I'd be like, oh, really? Wow! That's monumental, actually. All right, fuck it, DeSantis hat back on.
Well, I never put a DeSantis hat on, so... It wouldn't be back on.
Yeah, I guess it would be the first time.
So not back on. Still on. No, I'm joking. Still on. Oh, you're back on that old Ron DeSantis talks like a black woman kick, aren't you, Mike? No, not back on it. Still on it. Anyway. Anyway. Well, I want to know, what does it actually say? Can we find something from a conservative? What does...
Well, basically, I'm looking at Reuters here. Florida has told school superintendents that an advanced placement psychology course offered to high school students violates a new state law prohibiting instruction on sexual orientation and gender identity. The nonprofit that develops the course is said on Thursday. So it just sounds like to me that basically they're trying to bring the college board into compliance with their law, and they're having a shit fit about it. And so you're banning psychology because you're not letting us do what we want.
Every report is reporting it from the perspective of the college board. This is the New York Times. The college board says AP psychology is effectively banned in Florida. Nonprofit said it would not remove a section on gender and sexual orientation, as Florida has requested and advised districts not to offer the course. Okay, so what they were asking them to do, again, it's not even banning gender and sexual orientation. It is one segment in a teaching module about gender and sexual orientation, probably which has extremely over-the-top pro-tranny shit in it that is probably totally pseudoscientific lies. And Florida says, they don't say we're banning all, again, and I'm not defending them because they should ban it, but so what I'm telling you is what conservatives are actually doing is much more gay. So they're not saying remove gender and sexual orientation. They're saying this particular lesson plan, this particular section of the curriculum must go or be replaced by something that doesn't say X, Y, or Z. That's what it is. So what they're saying is, since we're not going to remove our ideological tranny propaganda from the curriculum, you have now effectively banned this course in your state. Additionally, this law that DeSantis has passed is going to be struck down by a court as soon as there's a lawsuit, just like all the other ones have. That thing where he had banned like AP Black History or some shit like that, where they were saying that, like they were saying, again, that was another thing, and I fell for it briefly, that they were saying like he banned Black History in Florida. That's not true. They asked, it was the same thing. They asked for certain things to be like tweaked to be more in line with like a conservative narrative on the thing, right? And the and again, the College Board and the libtards went hair on fire. He's banning Black History. But as we see now, there's actually a Florida approved Black History teaching, which is like just not really that different. It's just that it says things that it's actually really a partisan thing. Because if you actually look, and Ron DeSantis himself said this in his defense of himself to libtards, he said, if you actually read the curriculum, it's not anti-Black or racist in any way, and I believe him. It's just different based on like a critical race theory crap slightly than what the libtards wanted, and they're trying to gin up a partisan attacks on DeSantis by telling liberals and Blacks that like DeSantis is banning Black History. He never banned Black History. He never banned AP African American History. He never did any of that. They simply wanted some tweaks to the curriculum. And in the end, even those things get thrown out of court, and the court saying the state can't tell the College Board what to put in its classes. This is a restriction on the First Amendment. So it's all of it's a wash. This is all fucking shit they're trying to do to gin up some kind of excitement around DeSantis so he can be president. That's it. Anyway. So, yeah.
I'm reading the New York Post article on it. And yeah, it's basically they're blowing this up into something that it really isn't. It's Florida's just, hey, just take the stuff out of the curriculum, and college board saying that's impossible. We can't do that. It just, then we can't actually be an AP course. And they're both sides are basically accusing each other of grandstanding and partisanship, yeah, and playing games. And it's like, okay, well, even if this is a good for that, this is taken out, it's still not attacking. I mean, you have a state government in conflict with a college board, and it's probably going to lose to the college board.
It's going to lose. And the thing is that under an expanded Florida rule, instruction on gender identity and sexual orientation is now restricted in most cases through the 12th grade. That's a new law that DeSantis signed a little bit over a month ago. Florida Department of Education asked the College Board and other providers of advanced college-level courses to search their offerings for potential violations. College Board said it would not modify its content. Any course that did not address gender and sexual orientation should not be labeled advanced placement. To be clear, any AP psychology course taught in Florida will violate either Florida law or college requirements, the College Board said. The College Board, a powerful nonprofit, has been waging war with the administration of Ron DeSantis since earlier this year when his administration rejected the College Board's new African American Studies course. The curriculum included topics such as queer studies, reparations, and the Black Lives Matter movement, and the administration objected, citing a state law limiting how racist. Okay, so basically what happened here is now that the Florida came out with their own African American Studies curriculum. So it's not that they were banning the whole thing. It's not they ever banned it. They were accused of banning it because the College Board won't change its curriculum in accordance with the laws that they pass. That's what really is going on. I actually lied with an agenda in my February speech in Florida, giving Ron DeSantis more credit for doing something than he deserved. Even in the section of my speech where I was attacking him, I gave him more credit than he deserved in my February speech. I feel kind of dumb in retrospect, but there it was, you know. Researching for these speeches, I have to cover a lot of ground. So, yeah, I might lie with an agenda by accident. Sorry, guys. Anyway, I don't think I actually lied with an agenda. My speech would have been even stronger if I had actually understood fully what was going on. I would have been able to attack him as a fucking liar even more. Anyway. Yeah. So this is all nonsense. And I guarantee you that
I do think it's interesting the way that the liberal media locks shields behind this kind of stuff because of course the College Board is like part of their bureaucracy.
The College Board is inviolable from their perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just banning the College Board. It's not allowed, it's a terrorist organization, not allowed to operate in my state. I thought I just ban them. You know, we'll just make our own curriculum. Sorry, bye. We don't need you. Well, who are you anyway? It's a nonprofit organization. Well, fuck you then. Like, yeah. So, yeah. The American Psychological Association has supported the inclusion of gender identity and sexual orientation as a necessary part of studying human development. I would include gender identity and sexual orientation under the module on paraphilias for human psychology studies. That's where I would put them. There's various types of paraphilias. Paraphilias are similar across the board. They may have different manifestations, but in the end, they are all manifestations of some kind of polymorphous perversion where a human being is interested in like sex with like all kinds of stuff that's not, you know, somebody of the other gender. An adult of the other gender. Or the other sex, yeah. Right? Gender is a fake construct, right? It's sex, the sex, your biological sex. Sometimes people mix up those two concepts, but that's on. And then when they tell you sex and gender are different, they're just lying to confuse you. They're like, sex is your body, gender is in your mind. I'm like, well, two things aren't different. So, yeah, that's all made up.
Yeah, the things in my body affect my mind, so.
Right, and like again, I'm undergoing constant depression and anxiety due to being circumcised when I was a baby. So tell me about the fact that it's not harmless. Yeah. Just never-ending, constant.
Yeah, keeps me up at night.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right, I think we got enough for our first hour. That's actually pretty good.
Yeah. We don't until I actually get to the point where I can play. Like, oh, man, I don't even know where it is. Is this it? Yeah, this is it. All right. We'll be back.
You're listening to TDS on the Right Stuff. Doc Biz.